Blog Talk Radio.
I'm already giving you instructions in the dressing room. I expect a tough, clean fight. Protect yourself at all times. Request it from the challenge.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another great Tuesday we have here at Sports Radio. I must warn everybody here just for the time being that we are having severe thunderstorms here in Los Angeles. Yes, we can have thunderstorms in Los Angeles. So I just want to let everybody know in case there's a little bit of hiccups here and that, I just want you to be warned. So I am your host, John Robb, and I want to thank you again, everybody, for coming on tonight. We're going to have a great show. We're going to have authors Erica Spindler and Allison Leota on with you to talk about their books. So everybody can sit back, relax, because 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio will begin right now.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to feel you belong.
Everybody, we are having a lot of thunderstorms going on. That just makes it just a little bit more interesting with Suspense Radio. Thunder, lightning outside, great suspense authors, one of the best here, and Erica Spindler are going to be coming up in a very, very short time. I just want to announce to everybody that we are back from VoucherCon, and we did make it back safely. It was a very, very intense, great time for 3 days. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we were there, and it is an event that fans and authors and everybody, you know, you got to go see and you got to go experience it once. It is going to be in St. Louis next year, so you got to go check it out. If you're close into the Midwest, you know, it's definitely events you have to go talk to. We spent a lot of great people. We saw a lot of great things. I mean, so there's a lot of exciting things that's coming up. The other exciting thing that we have is that, you know, 519 Barnes & Nobles now are carrying the magazine, and we just got everything situated, and we posted things on Facebook. If you want to know if, you know, it's in your city, then, you know, please send us an email, and we'll see if, you know, we can get you where it's at, the address, and, you know, try to let you guys know where everything is. So, you know, it's just a really exciting time right now to be able to, you know, have everything that's going on with the radio show and, you know, everything else that's coming up. And, you know, I just want to say thanks to all the fans, and it's just fabulous. So if I'm a little frazzled right now, it's just because, you know, there was just a big bang that was outside, and I don't know if that means that, you know, I did something wrong and maybe someone is, you know, coming down to get me. So who knows? But like I said, it is definitely an exciting time coming up. Our last show, we didn't have one on Friday, and we missed the Alan Dershowitz. Something had happened with his publicist, so I do apologize for that. But we did have Todd Ritter and Mark Greeny here that was on last Tuesday, and coming up, we're going to have James Rollins and Iris Johansson on Friday, along with Steve Barry and Jeremy Robinson here on next Tuesday. So you definitely want to stay around and check out, you know, those shows, along with go to suspensemagazine.com. You can click on Suspense Radio. You know, the shows are archived there. There's five of them that show up, but there's another link that you can go over and check out all the shows that we had. You know, I think we might be up to 22 at this time. I'm not exactly sure. I didn't really count, but I think it's close to that. And, you know, it's available on iTunes and Zune, Netflix, 75 other podcasting sites. So we have pretty much taken, you know, the radio show and taking it everywhere. And, you know, we sent things out for XM Radio, Sirius Radio, and trying to get it on there along with, you know, like NPR and everything else. So, you know, who knows? We'll just be out there and we'll see what we can, you know, just keep bringing great authors and great things, you know, to all the fans. Well, the one thing that, you know, as far as BoucherCon and everything else that's coming on, you know, there's a lot of great events that are going to be in 2011, and we're going to see how many we can cover. I know that Left Coast Crime we're going to be going to in April, which is in Santa Fe, and we were also invited by, you know, best-selling author Heather Graham to go to her event in New Orleans around Labor Day, and that's definitely one that you guys want to check out, along with RT book, RWA. You know, there's the World Horror Convention, so there's a lot of great places for you guys to go out and mingle with the authors and be able to talk to who, you know, you read and everything else. And when you're talking suspense and you're talking thriller like we are now, you have to talk about, you know, one of the best that has been around here. You know, she used to write romance novels. And in 1996, she came out with her book called Forbidden Fruit and started breaking ground. And her latest book, Blood Vines, is out now. And I want to welcome Erica Spindler now to the show. So, Erica, thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing good, John. Thank you for having me on. This is exciting.
Yes, it's exciting for me because I never get a play in the rain. You know, we moved from Ohio to California. It's been almost four years, and we don't get a play in thunderstorms anymore. So this is really cool.
Well,
so I don't know if the lightning's going to come in and get me or not, but it's really exciting. So
what's the old cliche? It was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah, the ship rocked and rolled.
That's right.
Now it's the house that's rocking and rolling. So, but I want to talk. So Blood Vines is out,
yes.
And I believe it's your 14th suspense book.
Yes.
Am I right on
yes,
that one? 14.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So your 14th suspense book came. You know, your first one, Forbidden Fruit, 1996. So tell us a little bit here about Blood Vines and, you know, what it entails and, you know, what the readers can expect from you. I know they can read chapter one on your website, ericaspindler.com, but give
right.
us a little bit from the author point of view.
Well, you know, Blood Vines is one of those books that an author writes, and every so often there's a gift from the writing gods. I mean, it's just, it all came together for me, you know, the setting and the characters and the theme and the crime, and it just all wove together just so beautifully. It was just one of those gifts from the writing gods, just like vine, you know, wine is a gift from the god of the grape. But my husband and I were out in wine country for our first visit, and we were visiting all these wineries, and we went to this little boutique winery, and we're talking to the owner, and he said, "Oh, what are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I write suspense novels," and just without missing a beat, he was like, "You know, there's a lot of ways you can kill someone in the winemaking process." And for me, it was just like, that was it. I was like, really? Would you be willing to talk to me about that? And, you know, and even before we'd met with him, I just fell in love with the area. We were there in the winter when the vines were dormant, and it looks like hills and hills of these kind of twisted crosses, these grave markers. So it's a fascinating place. The book itself is about a woman who, the remains of an infant are unearthed in a vineyard that's being dug up. And, you know, it's the question is, you know, who is this child? It's obviously a cold case crime. The remains have been in the ground for a long time. And it's basically about, you know, a woman's search for her past and to find out who this child is, and she gets all wound up with all sorts of, you know, secrets, you know, betrayals, cults, all sorts of kind of crazy things that just worked in really well in Wine Country.
And because I noticed on your site, because you mentioned there's so many things that you literally called it that Pandora's box had opened, and pieces of Alex Owen's life started just coming out all over the place. So that's basically, in a nutshell, Pandora's box opened, and here everything
right.
is starting to come out.
Yeah, everything, you know, with those remains being unearthed, it's like a Pandora's box, and it's like everything begins to unravel. You know, and, you know, there are people who will kill to keep these secrets buried. And she's determined, even if it costs her life, she's gonna find out or unearth the truth.
So when you were talking with them about how to kill people in Wine Country, now I have another reason not to drink wine. did you find something literally that was just that just knocked your socks off? Like, are you kidding me? You can do what? Where?
Well, there were some really gruesome things too, like, you know, you could put someone in the crusher and destemmer, but that
would be
very messy. I didn't do that.
God.
But you know, there's a way.
Red wine now has a whole new meaning for me.
Yes, it does. The winemaker was even telling me how, you know, you can remote control start the things, you know, so the person could drive off, push the button, and start the crusher destemmer going. But I didn't actually use that, but it was fun to learn it. One thing that was really interesting to learn is the big the wine vats, and there's so much CO2 in the fermenting process that every year people literally become overcome because they have to they like climb up on these little catwalks, and they have to push down when the wine's fermenting, they push down like all the musk. They call it the skins and everything that rise to the top, and they keep pushing them down. And there's so much CO2 that it's really easy to be overcome. And what happens is you overcome, you fall into the tank, and you basically suffocate. You don't even drown, you suffocate.
Wow.
And they're supposed to wear harnesses and all that, but you know how it is when you're in a field and you feel very comfortable with what you're doing. You know, let safety slide. So I was able to use that in the book and kind of use that whole idea of something in the wine vat. I was able to use that, and it was fun because when I was out there for research, they had cleaned the vats were empty. They were done fermenting the wine and it had been drained, so they let me crawl in one. So I got to feel what it would feel like in there. Yeah, it was really kind of great. So in the wine caves play a part in the book too, and I found the caves, which are, you know, an environmentalist, it's such a great green way to keep wine at the right temperature because it's caves just dug right into the side of the mountains, but they can be kind of creepy. I mean, they kind of close in on you, and there's the live caves with all the lichen and everything growing on the walls, and I was able to do a lot of scary stuff with the caves as well.
Wow. Now, the person that you were talking to at the winery, did you happen to write them as a character in the book? Did you happen to do that at all?
No, I put their wine in the book, though. So, okay. And I think they appreciated that even more, you know, did a little advertising for their wine. But I mentioned them in the acknowledgments. I mentioned them in the acknowledgments in the author's note talking about him and his comment and how it led me to, you know, to the story Blood Vines, and then, you know, it was fun to be able to kind of give his wine big kudos in the book too.
Now, I have one of your fans that actually emailed us and wants to know if you still make time for your art.
You know, I didn't for years and years. Just recently, gosh, maybe a year ago, I started just for fun doing some little landscapes and pots of flower painting, you know, painting, nothing serious and nothing very good. But it was the first painting I'd done, golly, in 15 years at least. And
Wow. It's
been fun.
Yeah, I mean, when you're saying, you know, like no big deal, you know, not very good. I can't draw a stick figure. So really anything to me is probably really good. So you're probably cutting yourself short, I have to probably say, on that one.
Well, thank you. But it's,
yeah,
it's not serious at all. It's not what they taught me in art school.
They didn't teach me nothing. My poor little ashtray didn't even fire up right, and it just went, you know, it just looked like a blob. But, boy, my mom sure was proud of that blob, you know.
Oh,
I think every kid made an ashtray. So, yeah, now, you, looking back, it was like 1982, you decided, and you started writing, you picked up your first romance book, fell in love with it, and started writing romance. But then something clicked in your head, and you decided to jump from romance into suspense, you know, 14 years ago with Forbidden Fruit. What was that that triggered at you to say, I'm going to jump from romance and into suspense?
You know, it was, I completely followed my muse. It was a total accident. In a way, the way I started writing, you know, it was just fate. I came up with a story that had a subplot that the hero and the subplot of a little serial killer, and the hero was a New Orleans police detective. And I'd never really written any of that before. And I, you know, it was just a little subplot in this other kind of big, more like family drama, glitzy novel. And when I was writing the cop parts of the story, I was having so much fun. It was just like magic. So when I finished that book, I was like, wow, that was so great. I think I want to do more of that in my next book. And that's what I did. I did the next story I came with, I purposely tried to put more suspense in it. And then the next book, I put more suspense in it until, you know, it was mostly suspense with just a little romance. So I totally, like, followed my muse, which, you know, doesn't sound very calculating and maybe not smart business-wise, but creatively it was fun.
Yeah, and then you just started running ever since from 96. I mean, you've put out, you know, book a year a couple mm-hmm. times. I think I see, you know, there's like two books in a year. So you've really just, and all your books are pretty much are all standalones.
They are. They are. I have a few little crossover characters, but it's definitely not series. In my book, I think it was like 1992, maybe. I might have that date wrong. A book titled Bone Cold, it was set in New Orleans, and I came up with this family of Irish, Italian, you know, Catholic cops in New Orleans. And I kind of brought them back three or four times. But I'll take one member of the family and put them in the story, and there's a little crossover, but no real series work.
And that's kind of, I guess, a little bit different because you have so many suspense thriller writers who do write a series, and you hear so many authors saying, yeah, I sold a three-book deal with this character, so I have to write three. Why haven't you gone with a series, and why did you decide to go standalone?
Well, you know, maybe I just didn't know any better. You know, it was,
okay.
And following the muse, I came out of the, you know, the romance industry where, you know, I was doing, you know, standalone book one after another. I didn't really come from a mystery background where, you know, mystery, you know, Sue Grafton and all that. I came more from a Sidney Sheldon, Judith Krantz. You know, Stephen King kind of background. Those are the authors I really read. And, you know, so I guess I just didn't even think about it. And by the time I thought about it, it might be like almost too late to start a series. People are used to me doing standalones. I did a book a few years ago called Copycat, and it was two female detectives, one older, one younger, one a rookie, one like near retirement. And you know, I really loved that pairing. So then I did a follow-up book, and I just switched who was kind of the lead character. So it was Copycat and Breakneck. So when Copycat, Kit, the older cop, was the main protagonist, and then in Breakneck, the younger one was. And I really enjoyed that. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just a standalone writer.
Yeah, and
you
I
know,
think that that's and I think that's great because you're one of the writers that you can go and you can sit there and say, no, you can pick up any one of my books and just start reading it because there is no series. And so you can go back, forth, sideways, diagonally, however you want to do it.
True.
Because I think someone maybe like a Lee Child or a Jan Ivanovich or, you know, James Patterson that has 14 or 15 books out of one character and someone just finds them, do they really want to start with book 15 and try to start catching up with the character, or do they want to invest their time and go all the way back to number one and then try to catch up? You know, it's kind of a tough thing.
It is a tough thing. And the book industry's gotten so much tighter these days. I'm not sure the publishers are keeping books in print as long as they used to. Like, it used to be a mystery series, they'd give it a good chance to you know, become established, and they'd keep the, you know, the first books in print. I think it's getting harder sometimes to find some of those earlier books in the series.
Yeah, now with the e-books, I think they'll bring them out, but again, not everybody has e-readers to read them.
Right.
So,
true,
yeah.
But you're right. That's going to just really make a backlist available for readers.
Yeah, because you have quite a amount of books. You have about 11 or 12 that are no longer in print. So are there plans to bring those back in some kind of form? Or do you have the rights to all of those? And you're like, you know what? I'm just going to do with whatever I want to with them.
My first publisher, Mira, has the rights to all of them. So they've been kind of re-releasing ones. They're re-releasing Bone Cold in December. Last year they re-released a couple of them. So they're re-releasing them. I hope they make them available, you know, for electronic download. But I don't have the rights to any of them, which is really nice.
It really stinks, doesn't it?
Yeah. They get to decide what to do with them. I'd like to decide.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, today's day and age is almost like, you know, what's important to an author now? Is it important to hold your rights, or is it important to just get your book published at any cost? You know, I don't know.
Exactly. The business is changing very quickly. I mean, things are changing. I think the publishers, their heads are whirling, the authors, the agents, you know, nobody really knows where it's going to land because it's just changing. The delivery format is changing. So,
yeah.
No, I guess, you know, my job is to just continue to try to write the best book I can and entertain my readers, and I've got to stay focused on that.
Right, and that's what you do an excellent job of, is definitely keeping the focus, and, you know, the constant detail that you put in your books is just outstanding, which is great.
Thank you.
And so another question that came in from somebody was, if you could start your writing career over, what would you do differently?
Wow, that's a tough one. Can't ever really go back.
Hey, they're not all softballs on here. I got to give you a couple curveballs.
I might actually wish I'd gone about it a little more calculating. You know, hindsight and all that. You know how I said I followed my muse, and it was a lot of fun. But you know, I don't know. Maybe I would have, you know, maybe I wouldn't have. Because if I'd done that, you know, decided where I was going to be and be there. Instead of kind of going here, going there, writing a saga, writing a suspense. But the journey was so much fun. So, yeah, maybe, you know, part
well,
of
I guess the thing is, would you have written any romance at all, or would you have just jumped right into suspense and not written any romance?
I don't know if I could have, tell you the truth. I mean, it was just so organic, and I was determined I was going to be an artist, and something about that Nora Roberts romance just caught my imagination, and I thought, you know, I want to try to write. And that's what sparked it. So, you know, if that hadn't happened, who knows? Maybe I'd still be teaching, you know, college-level art and painting pictures.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Never, I'm so glad you're not.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad I'm not.
This is much more fun. And so if you could maybe, you know, when you decided I'm going to write and you had your book done and you sent it out, how long did it take before you got picked up?
It took a good 2 years. And actually, my first book never sold. It's in a drawer. It's in a box in the closet, I should say.
Oh, I'm emailing you about that one.
Well, I joke about it. I've, you know, nicknamed it Fatally Flawed because it really is fatally flawed. I made every mistake a beginning romance author makes. And when I was still writing romance and it was time to come up with a new story, you know, I used to say, you know what, I bet I know what I'm doing now. I could fix that book up and I could, you know, I could sell it. And I'd pull it out and start reading and go, no, you know, no, I better just put it back in the box.
So it took you a couple of years then when you finally found the book that was going to go. And did you hit right publisher or was it an agent that kind of got you going? Because back in those times, I think it was, you know, that it's a little bit different than it is today.
Yeah, it was a little bit different, but still I did find an agent. You know, I started going to conferences and, you know, joined RWA and so forth, and heard about agents. I started submitting to, like, Harlequin and Silhouette and places like that, and agents at the same time, and was getting rejections from both, actually. And I found an agent with my third book, and she sold it to Silhouette. So that's kind of how that happened. And then she really liked my second book but felt it needed work, so I really did a major revision on the second book and ended up selling that one as well. So my third sold first, then my second, and then on from there.
Now, going back, in your bio, you wrote that in 82, you picked up a book and you were hooked. Do you remember what the name of that book was?
No, and I'm so mad that I don't. But it was Anora Roberts. I do remember that.
So she was writing as Anora Roberts and not J.D. Robb, so it was Anora Roberts' book.
It was Anora Roberts. It was a Silhouette, I think it was a Silhouette special edition, and it was dropped free. It was like a promotional book. And I was at the store buying Kleenex and cold tablets, and they dropped the book into my bag. And when I got home, I read it. I was like, wow, this is great. And the reason I know it was Anora Roberts is because for a long time after that, I just associated series romance with Anora Roberts. So I would drive around, and when I'd see the same drugstore, it was a K&B, it was a local New Orleans chain, but a K&B drugstore, wherever I was in the city, you know, I'd pull in and go look at their book rack to see if they had any Anora Roberts books. So finally I had to branch out, you know, and I started trying other authors as well. But I really wish I remembered the name of that book because it changed my life.
So that's the book that changed your life, and it's unknown.
Well, but
that's just, well, at least we know, at least if you ever wanted to find out, it's probably pre-1982 or right around that time, and it might, and you know, the title might just hit you and you might be like, that's the one. That's the book.
That's a smart idea. I might do that. I'll have to go on her website and look.
Yeah, because you just, because you know it was pre-82, and if it was a little book, then it might have been right around 82 that it came out.
Right.
So, and then that might be the
I
one.
I know, Silhouette. That's... Yeah. I might remember.
See, I'm not only good for radio, I think of other things, too.
That's right, you do. Awesome.
So, now, here's an interesting question, because you see a lot of authors writing with each other, maybe doing a collaboration, or like in the Keeper series that's coming on, you see three great authors, with Heather Graham and Alexandria Sokofla, and I'm going to mess up her last name, so I'm sorry, Alexandria, if you're listening, and then Debbie LeBlanc, they're writing like a Keeper series, and each one is writing a book. Do you have an author that you would like to collaborate with maybe and maybe write something together?
Oh, wow. You know, I've met so many great authors, but I have a couple people that I'm really fond of that I think I could work well with. J.T. Ellison and I, she's a terrific writer. She writes series.
Yeah, we had her on the radio show with the Immortals.
Oh, you did? Okay.
We did.
Fabulous. And I love her, too. She's high energy and so much fun. And then Alex Cava and I have become good friends, and I really respect her work. And we all write very differently, but I think it would make for an interesting collection.
Well, I'll tell you what, Erica, this has been so much fun to talk with you. I want to thank you, huge fan. My wife's a huge fan. She's read everything you put out. So, everybody, it's ericaspindler.com, talking about Bloodvines along with some other things. So you definitely want to go out, pick up the book. You can go find everything on our website, which is a really great website you have. I got to let you know. And I missed the goodies section because you already sent the stuff out, but I'm going to go back and check the goodies section because I like goodies.
Well, keep checking because I keep putting goodies out.
Fabulous. So, Erica, thank you again so much. I don't know where the time went, but, you know, we'd love to have you back on and talk with you further when your next book comes out. We didn't even ask when it's coming out or what it is, but, you know, keep us updated so we can update everybody, and we'd love to have you back on.
Okay. Thanks, John. I would love it. This has been a lot of fun.
Great. Thanks, Erica. You have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that was Erica Spindler talking about her book, Blood Vines, and you can go to ericaspindler.com to find out more information about that. She did a lot of great research up in the Sonoma Wine Valley for that and even figured out how to kill some people in some pretty strange ways. So if you guys like wine, maybe you'll rethink it. But now we have an author that's calling, that, you know, our next guest, and her latest book is called Laws of Attraction, and it actually hit the stores today, and it's, her name is Allison Liotta. Her first book, she's an attorney around in D.C., and I'll tell you, this is a book that can hit you in home because she hits it right on the head. So, Allison, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good. And I know that you were busy today doing stuff, and you're flying to Michigan tomorrow for your book. So have you come off cloud nine yet, now that you've seen it? Because we saw your book today in the bookstore sitting there right on the new fiction section saying, I'm talking to her tonight.
I know. It was such a thrill. I saw it for the first time. And, of course, I had to take a picture of it with my phone and send it to my mom and my husband, my dad,
yeah.
Everybody. Do you ever stop feeling that when you see your books on the tables?
No.
I don't know.
I just bought my magazine today. Are you kidding me?
Oh, very good. That's very exciting.
I went out and bought it today. That's how I know. And, you know, and your mom was so nice. I talked to her on the phone.
well, she was very excited to see my name on the cover. So thanks again for your interest.
So, Laws of Attraction. Tell everybody a little bit about exactly what it is, because it is definitely a book that, you know, you get into some very great detail, and it's a very hard subject that you write about, but I know that you see that every day, you know, in your practice. So tell a little bit about what it is.
Okay. Well, I am a federal sex crimes prosecutor in Washington, D.C. I specialize in prosecuting sex crimes and domestic violence in the city. And you see a lot of the worst that people can do to each other. Absolutely. Just terrible acts of evil, vulnerable victims, you know, the worst things one human being can do to another. But I also, I found myself that I was inspired by some things I saw, some courage, some healing, the dignity of victims, the good Samaritans who would help out strangers, the courage of police officers and agents who are devoted to stopping crime. And I found that it was a job I wasn't leaving at the office. You know, I was thinking about it all the time. I'd go to yoga class, and instead of concentrating on my downward dog, I would be thinking about some victim I was trying to relocate. And, you know, I'm a mom now, so I find myself scoping out every room looking for who's a potential child molester. And at some point, I decided I had to take all this knowledge and all this imagination and put it to better use. And that's when I sat down and started writing Law of Attraction. And I tried to create an interesting story that was infused with the real details from these fascinating moments of my real job.
So you basically took not one case, but you took a lot of little things from a lot of different cases and put this into your fiction story.
That's right. So the story itself is fiction. It's a murder mystery involving a domestic violence homicide. But although the story is fictional, a lot of the details are from the real life cases that I've had, from real things that have actually happened in Superior Court, real witnesses that I've seen, real police officers I've worked with, real things that really happened. And I think anyone who works in the criminal justice system will read it and think, these details sound familiar, they sound right, because, you know, I've been there, that's what I do every day.
Now, and you, since you do this every day and you decided I'm going to write, is writing now something that you would like to focus in on and leaving your practice in law, or you still want to do both together?
Well, I hope to keep doing it all. You know, I really love being a prosecutor. I think there is no more satisfying job in America than putting away sex offenders. Although there are challenges too, and I tried to capture both of those, the challenges and the rewards in Law of Attraction. But I love writing as well, so I'm going to try to keep juggling them both. And I think actually the writing makes me a better prosecutor, and being a prosecutor obviously provides me a lot of material for writing. So the two are really kind of mutually beneficial.
Now, that's something interesting you just said. The writing makes you a better prosecutor. In what way do you think that it does that?
Well, you know, as a prosecutor, you sit at your desk and you interview people who have just had the worst things, usually the worst day of their life, happen to them. And sometimes talking to you, to the prosecutor, is the second worst day of their life, having to relive in just horrible, intimate detail what happened to them. And that's hard. And whoever comes in, I try to treat with just the most utmost respect and courtesy. But I found that by writing and thinking about what it's like to be the victim or the witness, sitting in that chair across from my desk, rather than me, the prosecutor, sitting on my side, I'm really putting myself in their position and what it feels like to sit there, that it actually made me understand and empathize with my real-life victims on a deeper level, a level deeper than I ever had before.
So when you're looking back and you have a busy schedule as being a federal prosecutor, where do you find the time to write? And what was it that kind of hit you? And I know you mentioned a little bit, but what was the one thing that maybe hit you in the brain that says, you know what, it's time to get a book out now?
Right. Well, I found the time to write by just promising myself that I would do it 2 hours every day. So I just got up before work and did it from 5 to 7 in the morning, every morning.
And the yoga was at 4, so you came back from yoga at 4?
Yeah, actually, there hasn't been that much yoga lately, I have to admit. I get most of my workouts these days from running after my kids. I have two toddlers, so
right.
Yoga's kind of gone out the window now.
That'll do it every time.
Yeah. And actually, I had a biological clock that went off about the same time for my kids as for my book. At about the time I got pregnant with my 3-year-old son, I started writing the book. And I don't know, maybe I just went through a creative phase, but I had this feeling that it's now or never. I've always loved books. I've always loved reading. And I've always thought that this was something I'd like to do. And it just struck me that, you know, I should sit down and actually put my money where my mouth was.
Now, were you a big legal thriller reader before you decided to write, or what did you read, before you became an author?
You know, I read everything. I've been a voracious reader. I think, and I did read a lot of legal thrillers, and of course my job just lends itself very naturally to the legal thriller genre. But I think my job is, my book, Law of Attraction, is really a mixture of my two favorite books/movies. I have two box sets of DVDs, The Wire and Pride and Prejudice. And I think Law of Attraction is kind of a mix of The Wire meets Pride and Prejudice, because it's about this young woman who is finding her way professionally and romantically, and but she's doing it in this world that is in some ways very gritty, in some ways very violent, and there's kind of the seamy underbelly of D.C., and there's also a mixture of some of the more kind of famous parts of D.C. as well. Some of the monuments and the fancy law firms and that side of things. So it's a mixture of all of those.
Now, when you were first starting out as a federal prosecutor doing sex crimes, did you find it difficult to, I guess, leave your emotions at the work instead of bringing them home, or was that difficult? Because, I mean, every day, you know, you're seeing terrible, terrible crimes, and I think it's great that you're able to take that outlet now and put it into a great book like Law of Attraction. But at the beginning, was it tough?
Yeah, it is tough, and you don't want to ever get calloused to it. But I have managed to get to the point where I can hear a case and I can sympathize with the victim, but I also, in my head, what I'm thinking is, well, you know, what do I need to do next? What, I need to get phone records. I need to see if there's videotape from that ATM. I need, you know, and I'm checking off. I need DNA testing. And, you know, you try to approach it a little more analytically and get the job done so you can get justice for the victim. Now, I'm able to do that, but my heroine, not so much, Anna Curtis, she came from a much more troubled background than I come from. And so she takes her job a lot more personally than I do. So she has a little more trouble than I do just leaving her job at the office.
Right, and you get the sense of that, that Anna, when you have, it's a big emotional, I guess, overcoming throughout the book that she has to have. And, you know, I think that that leads to, you know, you being able to be able to write that emotional part of the book, which is very difficult. And was that one of your most difficult parts in writing the book, was keeping it, you know, that emotional level high for her?
No, you know, it wasn't too hard to imagine what she would be going through because, you know, it is a world that I'm pretty immersed in. It did, though, take me a while to figure out what I was doing as a debut novelist. The book is about 300 pages, but I also have about 700 pages in a document called False Starts of just chapters that went nowhere or things that just didn't work. And it took me those 700 pages that are not in the book to figure out what I'm doing. And so I can say that the 300 pages that ended up in the book are the best work I've got, and I'm proud of it.
Now, looking now, because you're going to be continuing to write, I'm sure, you know, you're with Simon & Schuster and you're probably at least, you know, two more books, if not more, that you're already signed on there with. So in thinking about your next, you know, couple legal thrillers in writing, is there a subject matter that you will avoid writing because, you know, maybe some of them are just too, you know, just too, I guess, vicious or violent that you really don't want to touch?
I don't know. I haven't taken anything off of the table. People have asked me, well, are you going to keep working so that you can keep getting ideas for your stories? And I certainly don't think I need to do that. In 10 years of being a federal prosecutor, I've seen so many just fascinating stories. I don't think I have enough time to even write about all of them. So I certainly have a lot of material to work with. And at the moment, what I'm thinking is, you know, Anna's got some new cases coming up, and I think the next ones might involve a political sex scandal or possibly a gang that is involved in human trafficking of sex workers. So we'll go from there.
So you kind of have the idea, but you don't really have it done? You're just kind of maybe piecing it together?
I'm in the process of dreaming up her next adventures, and what's going to happen first and second and third is all a little bit up in the air right now, but it's a lot of fun thinking about all the things she can do and just going, it's fun going through my memories of cases that I'm proud of or where interesting or crazy or fascinating things have happened and thinking, well, which of these should I have Anna experience?
Right, because now that you're on a publisher's timeline, that could be more demanding than a judge's timeline.
That is very true.
And your editor is going to be like, your editor is going to be like, Allison, time's ticking here. I better start having some work in my hands pretty soon.
Well, I hope so. I guess every writer hopes for just that call, right? It means you're working and getting things out there, so that's good. As a writer, I have to say my shoes are much more comfortable than as a lawyer.
Well, yeah, you want that call, but you don't want that call and when you only have 50 pages and he wants it or she wants it in 5 days. Then you don't want
that's
that call.
True. That's a
like,
good point.
Okay, I'm getting it. So then you're going to go into the case and say, Judge, I need a continuance. Why? Because I got to finish my book.
That's right.
I don't know if that'll fly, but you never know in Washington. You just never know what's going to happen.
The dog ate my homework.
Exactly. So you've already told us then, so now we know that Anna is going to be a character that you're going to write as a series. And I don't know if you heard a little bit of what Erica was talking about in hers. All her books are standalone, and she just never wrote a series. So what made you decide to go ahead and say, I'm going to write a series about a person instead of saying, I'm just going to write standalone legal thrillers and maybe set them in different cities with different things? What made you decide to go with the series part?
Well, I actually wrote it as a standalone, and then there was interest in a series. So I hadn't pictured it as a series, but some other folks did, and I am very happy to continue with it. If people want to hear more about Anna, then wonderful. I'm glad to have some more adventures with her. And I like writing about D.C. for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, it's my hometown. I know it inside and out. I've been to every neighborhood so many times. And, you know, I as I drive through, you just see these landmarks. And to somebody else, it looks like a community center. But to me, I drive past it and I say, oh, yeah, that's the place where that guy stuffed that woman into the trunk of her car and, you know, brought her to
nice.
Fort Chaplin Park. Yeah, so I know it in this very particular way, and so it makes it interesting to write about. And it's also an interesting city because it's got these two different sides. It's got the side you see on the book on the bus tour. If you're a tourist that comes to D.C., you see the monuments, you see the mall, you see all these fancy buildings. But there's this other side where people live, the local people that may live in the shadow of the Capitol but never set foot in the building. And they're the people that give the city its vibrancy and make it an interesting place to live. But those two sides of the city don't actually meet up that often, except in the U.S. Attorney's Office, where I work, when the federal prosecutors are prosecuting the local street crimes. And so it makes it a really fascinating place to work and to write about. And, oh, I'm sorry, John, can I just mention one other thing?
Absolutely.
I should say that all of this is in my capacity as an author or just as a private person, not as a representative of the Department of Justice. And all of my views are not necessarily representative of the Justice Department's views. Thank you for letting me get that out of the way. I have to say that.
No problem. I understand. Don't worry. They don't listen to this show anyway. I don't let them on.
No, I think you have a big following.
I don't let those people on, though. I watch very carefully. You know, they might be big brother, but I'm little sister, and I can watch them too. So, but, you know, so I want to get into something here, but I do want to say, you know, congratulations. And I know I'm going to talk just sports for just a second, everybody, so hold on. But you are a graduate of Michigan State, which is doing quite well. So
I know. We're very excited.
So wouldn't it be awesome for you, because I'm a Michigan fan, so it wouldn't be, but for you, if Law of Attraction hit the bestseller list and Michigan State won the national title? I mean, you're talking a 2010, 2011 to remember, right?
That would be pretty much a dream year right there. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, everybody, we're talking into Allison Leota, and that's Leotta.com. And you have something going on that's very interesting on your blog. And my wife is a huge Special Victims Unit Law and Order fan. She's watched every Law and Order that there ever has and ever will be. And you're doing something called the Primetime Crime Review on your blog, where you're going through SVU episodes. And you just commented here on October the 14th on the number 5 one called Wet. And tell everybody what exactly you're doing. Well, what you're doing is you're pretty much saying what they got right and what they got wrong within the episode, like how things really work.
Right.
But why did you decide to go ahead and do that?
I think I spent so much time yelling at the TV myself or yelling to my husband, look at this would never happen in real life, that I thought this might be a more constructive outlet for that. And it's actually been a lot of fun. It's gotten a tremendous response. A lot of people just think it's a fun idea. So, you know, I have this perspective as a real-life sex crimes prosecutor. I watch the show. I do a little synopsis, and I grade it for its authenticity, what it's getting right, what it's getting wrong. And I try to write it up in a way that's interesting and not too much legalese. And people seem to really respond to it. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, it looks like episode 2 here, Bullseye, got a C+, which was the worst one. And, you know, so you're sitting here with the verdict, you know, A- and B-, B+. So you're really giving the readers an idea of, because my car got broken into one time, and I'm like, well, can't you get prints off of this or off of this? And the guy says, wait a second, this is not CSI, okay? And I said, well, yeah, but they can get it off. He's like, this is not CSI, and we are probably never going to catch the person who did this, so just relax.
I'm sorry to hear that about your car. That's
a
bummer.
I'm like, okay, all right. That was about 7 years ago, and I'm like, all right, I got you now. Forget it. Never mind. So I think.
And did they ever
great.
Catch the guy, John?
Are you kidding me? No way.
They didn't get the DNA off your car handle.
No, they got nothing. I mean, they went as so far as to try to say, okay, we're going to take this soda can, and we'll take it with us, and we'll say, and you know, give us your fingerprint so we can, you know, match off which ones are not there. But in case they touch that can, that's about the only thing that we can get prints off of. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What about the steering wheel? And what if they left here? He goes, come on. He goes, they didn't even steal your car. They broke into it. And he was honest. He goes, this is probably going to go to the bottom of the pile. And I'm like, you're right. Because it was in Cincinnati, so it was about 6 years ago, and that's what it was. So I was like, that's okay.
I'm sorry. You're a victim of a crime. That was a bummer. But, you know, there's a whole effect called the CSI effect that you're describing right now in your reaction to the crime. And that is that everybody watches these shows, and they think, you know, there's DNA everywhere, and there's fingerprints on every little thing, and we should be able to basically just swab a site and put it into a computer, and presto, a subject pops up, because that's what they do on Law & Order. So it's fun for me to explain why that doesn't happen in a kind of snarky sort of way.
One of your fans just typed to me, and they want to know, is it true that most cities have several-year backlogs on rape kits while New York does not?
Yes, that is true. And actually, there was an SVU that was just about that a couple of weeks ago. A lot of cities do have this really sort of shameful backlog of rape kits. A rape kit is after a person is sexually assaulted, the police or prosecutors will ask them the crime victim to go to the hospital and undergo an examination where evidence is collected. And probably don't want to get into it in the radio, but they take certain steps to try to collect things like, you know, DNA evidence and semen and hairs and that sort of thing. And then they put it all in a box and it's supposed to get tested. And in some cities, that there is a backlog. There's thousands that are sitting untested. And some cities are doing great with that. And it's a really powerful tool, the DNA testing. So it would be great if those cities would be able to catch up and get all of them tested.
So, well, let's see here, because we're coming down to the end, and I want to make sure the book is Law of Attraction. It's available today. You took your picture on your phone, and you're going to put that up on Facebook so we can all see it, which is good. But now, when do you think, or when does your publisher think that your next book is going to come out?
You know, we're just starting to talk about that right now, so I don't have a definitive answer. But hopefully sometime, I would think in the next year.
Yeah, so you're looking like 2011, maybe around the same time.
I think people, higher pay grade than I am are going to make those decisions. And I will let you know as soon as I know, but I appreciate the interest.
Right, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, it has been such a joy to chat with you. We had you in the magazine for September where we kind of, you know, broke and debuted you to all of our fans, and everybody that was out there. So the book is Law of Attraction. It is out today. If you go to Barnes & Noble, I know they have it in the new fiction section because I saw it sitting there. And so everybody, you know, we were talking with Allison Leota. So Allison, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, it was great to hear everything that, you know, that you're doing and what's going on. And we can't wait to have you back on with your next one.
Thanks, John. My pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And thanks again for all your interest in Law of Attraction.
Absolutely. No problem. So everybody, again, and that was Allison Leota that we had on here with Law of Attraction. Her website is Allison Leota, LEOTTA.com. You can go find a lot of information. You can go check out that blog because it is definitely something that if you watch Law & Order, SVU, she does a great job of letting you know, what is real, what is fake, or you know, verdict on exactly what they got right or what they got wrong. Check out her book, Bio News Vent. You know, she has her tour that she's going to be stopping around. You know, she was just today in Maryland, and she's going to be going, you know, to many different other places. So, you know, it's great to be able to see, you know, such a great debut author come on. Now, we also had Erica Spindler, and you know, she is absolutely fabulous. Her book, Bloodvines, is coming out, or it is out, so you can go check that out. You know, it's been an absolutely, you know, crazy run here that, you know, that we've been able to put together, which is great with the magazine and to be able to bring these authors to you. And, you know, if you're not listening to the show live and you're listening to it taped, this is a chance for you to go back and listen to a lot of the other shows that we do because, you know, we're trying to do something different, you know, for the fans to let you guys hear straight from the author, you know, what the book was about, who they are as a person, and bring the author more into the spotlight instead of having them leave, you know, back behind the curtain where, you know, people just see their book, but you don't really know who the author is. So now that you get to know who they are, why they write, what they do, you know, it makes it a lot more entertaining, I think, for the reader to be able to understand, you know, where they're coming from while you're reading their fabulous work. So, you know, again, I join everybody to go to suspensemagazine.com, check out a lot of the things that we have going on there. We're going to be having a lot more that are going to be coming up. A lot of other plugs that I always have to do here is hauntedcomputer.com. One of our good friends, Scott Nicholson, is, you know, going to be doing his 90-day blog tour, which is going on now. He writes for us in the magazine. He is one of those people who takes those indie authors who's looking for, you know, how to get their book out there without doing the traditional publisher way, and they're e-booking it, they're getting it out there on their own, they're getting their word out, and you got just a lot of great authors, you know, that way that you can check out. You know, the other thing that we have is, you know, we have some other great people that write for us. Starina and her book In the Name of Revenge is out. Terry Ann Armstrong and her book In Morning Menace is out. You know, the one thing also that we found from BoucherCon, which a lot of people have to do, is when you are sitting here and, you know, you're an author and you're listening, you're like, how can I market myself? How can I market my book? You know, what can I do? Well, the first thing to do is this. And when we found this out, because every author has the same problem, they cannot go ahead and, you know, figure out what to do. Well, the first thing is to get off your butt and go do something. Because if you do nothing, then that's what you're going to get, is nothing. There's a lot of great places out there to, you know, blog yourself, Facebook yourself, go out and do whatever you can do to get as many people as you can and start getting the word out to everyone. WordPress has a great blog that you can go out and download and, you know, start writing your blog and start getting people to read it. And it doesn't have to be about your book. It can be about anything you want. You know, just get people to read who you are and make yourself interesting to them. Because if you're boring, they think your book is boring. So sit there and, you know, start marketing. We help with suspense publishing. We do everything that we can. You know, get yourself on radio shows. Get yourself out there as much as you can. You know, do a lot of stuff on your own that you can do. So that's my little, you know, thing that, you know, a lot of people are talking about in BoucherCon as far as, you know, authors, that the biggest thing is not marketing and having to do it themselves. You would be shocked to find out that probably 95% of the authors that you read pay for marketing on their own. Their book tours, you know, their flyers, their book signings, going to conferences, that's all coming out of their own pocket. And, you know, the other thing is when you go to Barnes & Noble and you look on that front, and you know, on that front table, that's paid to get there. Barnes & Noble is not putting it there saying, these are the best books to read. Those are the books that are paid. So go to the stacks and find that great author that you might not have known, and don't just pick up the one that is right there in front of you. Go out and go search and go find some people. So, you know, again, I want everybody to join us here on Friday night when we have author James Rollins and Iris Johansson, you heard it right, coming up here on Friday night. It's going to be an absolutely fabulous show. So, everybody, it's been great. We will see you all Friday. Thank you so much for joining us here on Suspense Radio. Have a good night.